Hello and welcome to this Do Something for Nothing podcast takeover for The Conduit. My name is Joshua Coombs and I'm going to be your co-host alongside my friend and Conduit member, Dr. Ebony Escalona. For this series, we've interviewed some really interesting people who are doing things outside of the box to benefit their communities and our planet. For a bit of context on Do Something for Nothing and how it began, in 2015, I was working as a hairdresser in a salon in London. I started going out and offering free haircuts to men and women who were experiencing homelessness and living on the street. This grew into a movement of other people getting involved with their skills and their time to positively affect the lives of people around them. The conversations we've had really embody this spirit, so we're excited to share them with you and we hope you enjoy it. Thank you.
Do you really listen or just wait for your chance to speak? Regina reminds us of the incredible gift we all have within us to truly listen to another without judgment or desire to fix. A Hand to Guide was created after Regina experienced abuse and homelessness. This one-on-one buddy system starts by just listening to that individual human living in desperate times. And she works alongside charities and information groups to provide a personalized steer to a better life.
Okay, Regina, it's really, really good to have you here. I wanted to speak to you since the first time I met you, which was, I think, about a year ago.
Yes.
Or maybe more.
Yes.
I remember I got off at Shoreditch High Street and I was making my way to Brick Lane or somewhere nearby. And I stopped because, I got to be honest, first of all, I saw the brownies that you were selling. I'd love to tell you that the first thing was you guys who were kindly giving them out. And But then obviously I saw you guys and it was big smiles and you were sort of chatting to people nearby and you had this table set up.
Yes.
So I was drawn in by the brownies.
Yeah.
But then started having a chat with you about what it is that you were doing. And it was, it was amazing. I'm just so glad that we had like a conversation and chatted because it was really inspiring to find out about your organization, A Hand to Guide. And yeah, for anyone who hasn't heard of it, I'd love to initially just maybe hear a bit about that. And you know, just because of the nature of the organization, what it's about, it was just amazing because you were so bubbly and smiley and full of like life and love that day. I was like, oh, it was really interesting then to find out kind of the depth of why you're there and like the importance of like the message.
Oh, lovely. It's funny seeing things from the other perspective. You just got off the train and you saw the brownies. Mm-hmm. I must add that that was Laura that made those amazing brownies. She is the G of brownies. And I'm sure that's why you went straight over. So we were selling the brownies and other condiments and bits for A Hand to Guide, which is a charity that I set up. And it was all very, very rustic. Even speaking to you at that moment, I was like, what am I talking about? But I knew what, you know, why I wanted to set it up. And the main reason is I felt like this world can be very, very lonely. We can go ahead and live each day, you know, just doing the rat race thing. And even if something small or to you, it might be small, to somebody else, that's something huge. And sometimes you just need somebody to talk to about that thing. And especially if you're dealing with depression in particular, I mean, where do you turn if you're already in a dark place? Google and all of those things seems like a daunting task, you know. Imagine having that person there that's going to say, do you know what, the reason why you're, you know, in that situation, how's it, let me see if I can go ahead and show you this company that you could speak to and da-da-da-da-da. And speak on behalf of that person as well if they're nervous. So that's why I decided to start A Hand to Guide, because there's so many things going on at the moment. Homelessness, depression, you know, people that are getting in situations within families and all sorts. And there's no, outside of their own families, who are they speaking to? So that's why I decided.
Yeah. And how did that start for you, like from your like perspective, and like how did that come about and become, you know,
I sat down one day and I was going through my own situation, and I'm not a very selfish person. That's probably one of the things that I've noticed about myself, is that if I'm going through something, I think about the next person that's going through the same thing. And I'm like, ooh, okay. If I'm going through it, let me see if I can reach out to that person. We can all team up together and let's go through it together and get out together. So it was a situation that happened with my partner and at the time, where I just felt really alone, didn't know what to do. I could have stayed in a you know, emotionally abusive relationship just because of money, security, all of those kind of things. But I stepped out and I said, enough is enough. you know, okay, I'm going to come out with only two black bags, but guess what? I'm going to make something of myself. Whether it takes 10 years or 2 minutes, I'm going to do that. And that's why I decided to kind of look out for other people that are going through the same thing, because we all can. Relationships end, you know, situations happen. Families, you know, are broken up every day. Who can they speak to? So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that,
yeah.
Regina. You know, you did mention there that real concept of loneliness. And I think all of us across the world go through various degrees of mental health, trauma, all sorts. And it's the aftermath of that pain. It's like what happens in that aftermath, right? It's about whether you want to wake up in the morning or not. And you're providing this hand to God. You're there saying, I'm thinking of the next person. But who was that person, or who was that support space for you in that moment when you walked out with those two black bags?
My best friend at the time, or she's still my best friend, well, at the time.
Relegated.
Got rid of her, joking. She's the bestest person because she's selfless. And when I was going through it, she was the person that I can speak to for an hour of, and she would not think, okay, can I tell you about what's going on with me? Hello. She would just let you just vent and talk and plan with you. And she's one to Google on the side and be like, right, okay, you know, maybe you could go here and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, not everyone's got something like this. Like, you know, she's the blueprint, if I would say she is. So yeah, that was my person.
Love that. She was the blueprint.
She is.
So you tried to create some copy and pastes.
Yes, basically, yes, yeah. She doesn't know this. She's going to be surprised when she hears this. But yeah, Davina, I know you're listening.
Yeah, and honestly, you're so right, though. Not everyone has that Davina, do they? Not everyone has that person in their life. And it's such a common thing, you know, because obviously why we met and I think connected straight away is I told you a bit about like what I do, usually my work and like working a lot with people living on the street. And for context for people listening as well, like the way I do that is I cut hair for people, you know, I cut hair for people. And it's kind of this action that started for me about 6-7 years ago, going out and using the skill I had when I was working in the salon to translate that to provide a service that people might not have access to. But the thing I realized really almost straight away was the conversation and the time I was spending turned out to be a lot more important. And kind of lasted longer than when the haircut might go out, you know, because I'd build relationships with people. And, you know, from there, I speak about, you know, I think we have really similar messages in a way, which is talking about loneliness and mental health and kind of the importance that one person can bring. Like, obviously, it's not going to fix somebody's whole world financially. And when we're looking at like the socioeconomic, you know, side of how this country is an incredibly difficult place at the moment with all kinds of things, but the side of like just that one-on-one being there for a person, I found that when people ask me, well, you know, what is the main cause of people ended up becoming like homeless or like street level really spending, and I'm like, well, there's a million reasons, right? But underneath it all, sometimes I kind of bring it down to this having one person, or the lack of having that Davina, or having that person it might look like for somebody else, like having that one person in there, like thick and thin, just to be there for you and maybe, you know, love you unconditionally if that's a family member, or just really just be solid as a rock for you. And yeah, I just run into that all the time. So what obviously you're providing and you know, who that person was for you is really important. Do you feel that through kind of, you know, the rat race that is London where we're sat right now, you know, and kind of whatever metropolitan kind of environment people might live in, do you feel that there's more that, you know, everyday people can do to be there for one another, to try and kind of help out with this like mental health crisis that we're in, this kind of loneliness crisis? You know, there's so much of this now, and I think we're becoming more aware of how important that is, whether you've got a high flying job in a penthouse or whether you're kind of, you know, checking into a hostel, you know, and you know, you really have nothing, like, or you're claiming kind of next to nothing as far as support. Do you feel there's a way that like all of us can kind of help each other out a bit more with this?
I'm going to go right back to the basic of smiling. It's unbelievable, right? You're walking down the street and you're staring at that person because, I don't know, you've got a million things in your brain. And that smiling of that nod, that good morning, makes a whole heap of difference for that person's life. No joke. When I get that, my family's from Stevenage, and back when I was growing up, it used to be the thing. You know, you see someone in the street because there's hardly anyone around. You say hello. And I was like, wow, hello, hi. Before you know it, you're kind of having a little chat about, you know, the gardening or whatever they're doing or whatever. And you've got another perspective of that person's life, and you start thinking about your own life and whatever. That's A. I always think, as a human, we need to try and interact a little bit more, you know? A man that comes up to you and says hello doesn't immediately think, you know, oh, he fancies me and all that kind of stuff. Let's scale back and just say hello, A. B, for me, would be being selfless. So if you're hearing that person that's complaining about whatever that's going on or whatever, and just being that listening ear and stop talking. When I was learning how to listen, I used to put my finger in my mouth. I don't know where I heard it from, but somebody said, put your finger in your mouth. Like, oh, I guess maybe it was from childhood when the teachers used to tell you to do that. Sit with your arms crossed and put your finger in your mouth. When someone's telling me something, I just do that. And because usually my phone call, when I'm working, I do it over phone. So I used to do this and just listen. And I think we could do that with our friend. We can do that with our mother. We can do that with anyone. Just stop, listen, and take it in. And have an answer. Even if you don't have an answer, tell them you'll get back to them. And do it. You know, that is, it's 101, isn't it? But I don't think we do that.
And often people don't want advice. Yeah. They just want to be listened to. You know, it's sitting in the rubble and just, you know, being next to them. Mm-hmm. And not everyone wants a suggestion or a piece of advice.
Right. You know? Feeling heard, I think, is a really fundamental need as a human. And, you know, it's so interesting, yeah, what you said, Ebs. That's it. Like, a lot of the time we do try and provide advice.
And
what can I give you right now that's going to be a tool that you can, or just, yeah, some advice. And, you know, a lot of the time, you know, as you said, like, people, that's not really what we need. We just need to be sort of heard and listened to. We don't need to have the answer straight away. But that sharing space, it doesn't take everything away, but it lifts things. It kind of, that heaviness that is your own percolating of your own dark thoughts, the kind of, you know, how those things can ruminate and just be within, like, when it gets so insular, like, you know, when we're talking about the kind of sharp end of, like, how difficult, you know, like, someone's mental health might be, and that cycle, it can just at least break it, you know what I mean, for a minute when someone's there listening to you. It just lifts a little bit of it. It kind of at least some of it disperses, perhaps even momentarily, which has got to help. And I'm really learning that myself still. Like, through, you know what, I what you're saying about learning to listen is an amazing thing, right? Because I think we feel like we all can listen because that's what we do. We talk, we listen, we're humans, you know. Mm-hmm. But active listening, like actually listening and not speaking or needing to reply or mirror or have the answer, it's a real journey to go on. Because, you know, when I go out and I do what I do, I feel like I'm really good at listening. But within the personal relationships within my own life, I still got a lot of work to do. Especially, you know, when you feel like you've really, I don't know, just a lot of conditioning is what I mean. It's like lots of years that you've got to unpick. But I like that. Like, so actually having like an action where you can put a finger to your mouth maybe and kind of just like remind yourself like it's time to listen, not to talk. I think that's beautiful.
Reminding yourself you're not just waiting for your turn to speak.
Exactly.
Which is exactly what we think often listening is. Wait for the silence and then, I want to get my point across.
Yeah.
you know, I love those two very simple kind of things that people can take away in any situation. But if we think more specifically about your situation as a woman and as a woman who had a child when you were going through this emotional abuse and turmoil, how can we get better at recognizing this in our friends, our groups, our society, our community? Because sometimes it's hiding in plain sight, and the stigma and shame around putting your hand up and saying, I need help here. How can we get better at this? Because I was reflecting with Josh earlier, and my mother was someone in that situation. And as a child, I had to watch some pretty horrific things, but kind of told not to say anything because of that shame. And I was just thinking, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get better at recognizing differences that could be little warning signs that we might need to step in?
Wow. I knew this was going to be deep, but yes, 100%. I am a child of abuse as well, same as you. And I think what was missed for me was the way that life is set up nowadays, nobody has time for anybody. And even a child that's at school, that's come in with a little scar, that's come in as a little bit down, that's, you know, I feel like teachers don't have even have the time to even look and see what's going on. I mean, unless it's something very, very obvious. I'm thinking back to my own, and that's the only way that I can see it, is what was missed for me was my timidness was taken and flipped on its head to, come on, talk. When I should have been asked, what's going on? This is a safe space, let's talk. And I feel like that's the same being an adult and going through emotional abuse and my friends not really knowing what's really going on. All I said was a couple of bits and, oh, he kind of controls what I wear. Oh, he kind of, you know, and they would just kind of go, well, my man will never do that. You know, blah, 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 blah. Stop and listen to what she's just said to you. She's just said to you that he is controlling what she's wearing. Instead of coming with an answer, what we were saying before, how about you sit and talk to her now and dig a little bit more, find out what else is going on, pair up with that person now, because you might be able to, you know, delve a bit deeper in that person's life. And when you do that, it's not because you're trying to pry or you're trying to gossip or anything like that. Let them know that's a safe space to speak to, whether you're a manager of that person, whether you know the passerby that likes to cut grass. Stop, listen, and find out exactly how you're going to help that person. And I feel like that's going to be my motto throughout everything for me personally, is listening and, you know, seeing the warning signs. There's plenty. There really, really is. And if there's something that, you know, happens in your relationship and you're hearing from somebody else that this something else that's different that's happening in their relationship, try and figure out, is that normal? You know, yeah. Is that, you know, do a bit of research. I don't know. That's what I think.
No. Getting curious is a good one.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, no, I think that's really, you know, that's it's to the theme that, as you said, we were speaking about before, which is, you know, trying to quieten the mind a little bit and maybe search for the clues in what somebody's saying. And again, like, you know, I have empathy for people there because we live in a culture a lot of the time, especially if you're watching a certain type of entertainment on TV. We're used to seeing people back and forth and it's like a tennis match of conversations and whatever. Like, you know, we might be on social media where our attention span is stolen a lot of the time, unwillingly. But, you know, we're on these things. So our attention gets so reduced by a lot of modern life that it really is about trying to find ways to quieten the mind to listen. Because you're right, within those things that you were communicating, things like controlling maybe what you might wear or where you go and who you see, which I know is obviously part of your journey, is a very common part of a lot of people's journeys who've experienced abuse within intimate relationships. It's like there's telltale signs there. You know, I guess to what you're saying, it's Ebony, it's like it's trying to get, yeah, I guess trying to collectively kind of get better at, yeah, hearing that within our community, you know, through the kind of things, signs that might not be so obvious. And then from there, I suppose it's about trying to find ways of, as I'm sure you'd speak to, like Regina, like trying to get through in a way that, of course, I'm sure it takes a while to hear that as you, who were in that situation, you know, yes, to actually be able to kind of like recognize that was going on for yourself. You know, was that part of that? Like, obviously, I'm sure part of your journey was like almost recognizing like, oh, this is happening to me, that I have to recognize now that this is something. Do you remember that? Like, yes, day where you were like that night, was there like a moment where you were like, enough is enough? And like, yeah, you know, that yes, really like clicked for you.
Yeah, it did. I mean, I think I was in a situation where I didn't recognize that that wasn't, I don't think he even realized that that was emotional abuse, and he still doesn't. I think it was when I was working and he would just hide himself just to kind of, you know, kind of prey on me and find out what I'm doing and who I'm talking to and so on and so forth. And I think it was a knight in shining armor again. Davina was the one to tell me, do you know, I just saw your partner. And I was like, what? Where? Not knowing this is what he regularly does. It's kind of just kind of, and that's when I had, you know, quiet moments and trying to observe. But it's funny, that went on. I wasn't even pregnant at that time. You know, that still went on and on and on and on, 4 years down. Yeah, but it takes a while.
So for you, it wasn't really like a rug pull moment of one moment, you know, Regina in a relationship to Regina trying to find temporary accommodation. It wasn't a rug pull moment. It was a slower, chronic burn.
Yes, yes. And the thing is with me is that I forget a lot. So if you said something that's really mean to me and I've healed from it, I've forgotten it. And that's painful as well, because when do you say enough is enough? You know, and mm-hmm. just carry on and on and on and on and on. And when I finally, I think there was somewhat of a rug pull, I would say, was when I was pregnant, and he started an argument with me just because he felt like it. And it was a very intense argument. And imagine being heavily pregnant and you're just like, why are you doing this to me? And I started having pains and Braxton Hicks and all sorts was happening to me. And I was like, this is not normal. This is not how a relationship should go. Mm-hmm. A man's supposed to, you know, in that situation, you're meant to make me feel as comfortable as possible, not do the opposite. And that's when I remember I was in the shower and I was just talking to my baby in my belly and going, I think I'm going to leave. You know, I was like, I don't think this is right. This doesn't feel right. And yeah, in my heart of hearts, I wish I'd left from that moment on.
Oh, yeah, well, honestly, the courage, though, that it takes and it did take to you know, to get to yourself to that place to be able to leave it all, you know what I mean? Because by that, you know, it is still your whole entire life, however difficult it was, however, like, awful I'm sure it was for you at times, you know. It takes a hell of a lot of courage. And, you know, that's why it's almost like trying to change the script with some of this stuff is really important for me. Like, a lot of the women that I'd meet, like, out there, you know, people who are actually experiencing homelessness on the street, like, the percentage is so high that people have been through domestic abuse of some kind, you know, and been through, like, maybe it happened also as abuse as a child when they were younger. So it's like, we look at people and we see them kind of in this way where when they're kind of masked by the veil of homelessness, i.e. like the sleeping bag, the what, you know, might be kind of a very different image we're used to seeing on the day to day, someone who hasn't had a chance to look after themselves, someone who might have substance misuse and kind of certain issues like battling addiction, which can obviously take hold of the body and the behavior of a person very quickly. When you see someone in that position, you don't know their story, it's very easy to sort of put them in that box of like who you might think they are from the outside. But especially when I'm speaking to people who've left a certain relationship and the courage it's taken them like to do so, I have just such a tremendous amount of admiration and respect. And even though they're in a really difficult position, it's like, yeah, they should be shining kind of examples of like courage and kind of like, you know, should have a lot of empathy for that. But I understand when we just see somebody in that image of where they're at in the time, we haven't got the context. But even more importantly, that's when it's like time to have that conversation, time to listen, time to sort of to spend a bit more time. And yeah, it's just something, you know, that I see really often. And I think that the hostel system, I'm sure you experienced, like I'm sure you actually spoke to them about that when you got there, when you first turned up. You said it was Lambeth Council. I remember when I first met you and you told me about that and you said, like, first of all, didn't you get turned away maybe? And like, was there enough support in that? Because obviously that's a very linear kind of service sometimes and it's a lot of box checking. But this whole thing that we're talking about, you know, if you've experienced this kind of abuse, it's like, yeah, how did you find that? Like, what was that like for you when you first turned up?
I'm incredibly emotional today, so
yeah. And, please, and also excuse me. But also please just yeah. For like disclaimer, you don't have to like
I feel like this part in particular I've been wanting to really say, and I've been on different, you know, avenues, and I feel like I've been kind of muzzled, you know. The way the councils are working nowadays within England is, in my opinion, is like having a gang. Like, lots of different gangs everywhere that are like, if you don't live in this area, this is postcode wars.
Yeah, right.
This is for you, and that's it. And for somebody like me, at that particular time, I didn't belong anywhere. And I think I'm still the same. I'm a butterfly. I don't belong anywhere. So when I went ahead and spoke to Lambeth Council, they didn't identify that a way of being able to keep someone where you want them to be is don't let them have, you know, anything at the address. I have no evidence that, you know, no paperwork to say that I lived somewhere. So when I turned up and they were like, well, we can't see if you've been here for 5 years. So I'm like, okay, well, what do I do now? Oh, you've got to go. Then the next time I go again and they're telling me, oh, you've got a job, so you're going to have to leave that job and get on Job Seekers Allowance. And when you do that, then you can come back and get housed. Where are you turning me away to? Mm-hmm. I'm there with a baby in a buggy and, you know, imagine having to make, you know, the milk, like sitting in the seat, and they've made you wait 5 hours. And to get told that, you know, you don't belong anywhere. We don't see any evidence of you. You have a job, therefore you've got to go home. What is going on here? And then finally, for me to go back up to Stevenage, where, you know, my family are from, and just going, somebody help me. And then, A, the person listened, took the time out, and was able to actually identify that I do, you know, have evidence that I do live within Lambeth. And for them to go back and say, you must house me. This took 4 days of me going backwards and forwards with a newborn. Can you imagine? And this is not just me being there for 2 minutes. I was there for 5 hours. I was literally watching them coming in from their beautiful, nice houses. And it was just unbelievable. It's wrong what they're doing right now. And I really do hope that they're starting to reflect and change a little bit, because more and more people are going to be in this situation because of the, you know, what's going on outside. And they need to realise that they shouldn't be working as a gang. Everybody should be together. We're all one. London borough is a borough. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be Lambeth, Newburb, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It should be, where do you live? How can we help you? And I didn't get that chance to say how. I don't think I ever got asked that question. Isn't that the beginning?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, to address the human, not the number or the postcode. When Josh touched on that courage piece we were discussing before, yeah, sharing this story, being here, being a role model, like real rebel courage. But you've gone one further, because Hand to Guide is then born. It's not easy, as we've just discussed before, to like step out of that rat race and do it your way. So talk us through how you did that, but also how you find that energy, because this whole podcast theme is around doing something for nothing in all those guises, and that takes energy. And, you know, the classic phrase of, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. So yeah, how did you take that courage to go one step further to support others? And then how do you support yourself?
So I had, I still have, whether, you know, we're working together or not, I had an amazing team of people. I had good friends, and we all came together and decided that, you know, this dream that I've been out here writing down on my notepads and stuff, I should actually go ahead and make it happen. And I remember going downstairs and I spoke to Rachel, one of the other ladies that was there, and she was just like, do you know what, I've always wanted to do this, you know, that, you know, just help people and, you know, get into psychology. I've got a master's in this. Why am I not doing it? And it's just stepping out of that comfort zone of, oh God, I'm too scared to, you know, do something, and having somebody else's, you know, input and going backwards and forwards. And before you know, you're speaking to Laura and moving on. And I had a team of people that are all strong women, and they've all got their own stories, you know, and going ahead and saying, I want to help, you know. And that's where it was born. It was born really and truly, if you go all the way back, was from the emotional abuse and saying that I want to help people. But then to actually have people there that's going to actually have laptops and make this like this dream a reality was how it began. And pouring from an empty cup. The empty cup is full when you have other people around you. For me personally, I was still living in temporary accommodation. Even when I met you, I was still living in temporary accommodation. Nobody would know that, because I have a smile on my face. You would never know what's going on. We had cockroaches. We had all sorts. But I went downstairs to speak to Rachel, the same person that's living in the same block. And she was just like, I need to get out of here. This is enough. You know, I can't take this anymore. But then I know other people are going through exactly what we're going through. Let's go, you know. And that was the full cup. We were both exhausted. absolutely exhausted. But it was the rapport between the two. It was the Laura knowing how to do social media and reaching out to the masses. And that's where the full cup came from. And I think if I did it myself, that would have taken 5 years to do. I'm going to be completely honest. But because everybody was, the energy came from other people, that's where we were able to launch. That. Yeah.
And can you share then to like really highlight to the listeners, perhaps a story of impact or perhaps a bit of a case study of like what Hand to Guide has done for someone?
Oh, gosh. So I had a gentleman that, I've got so many stories actually, but I had a gentleman in particular that has been living on the streets, doesn't know what to do, referred to us, and you could tell that he was just like, you're just going to be another one that's going to be out here talking and telling me, oh, man, I'm going to be fobbed off in 1 million places. Mm-hmm. He was just like, whatever. And his energy, he was kind of rude. But I said to myself, do you know what? I don't really care if you're rude to me. I know you need the help and I'm going to help you. And like I said, and I always say, when I say that I'm going to help someone, it's not because I want to give them all the answers, because 9 times out of 10, I don't know all the answers. But my thing is, listen. And I sat down for, and the first initial chat we always do is just to talk. And I always let them have as long as they want. And they just talk it out and they go from one to the other. Mm. And you know, your mind is just full of all. Like you can go.
Oh, I know that. That is my mind.
You practically have ADHD because you just want to spill everything out. Mm-hmm. Someone's listening. Let me talk. And it was for me to kind of write down, okay, so this is the problem. Oh, no, this is the problem. And then find out what the problem really is. And we kind of just worked together. And I said to him, okay, you know, you're homeless at the moment. Your family is over in Japan. You're desperate to see them. He didn't have a job. What is it that a Hand to Guide can do for you? And I always ask that question. That's why I said, I don't understand why the council didn't have that basic question for me. What can we do for you? You've spoken for an hour. What do you want me to do? And I always call it that. We're a personal assistant. You know, what is it? And he was just like, right, okay. First of all, I want to, you know, break down the barrier that I have between myself and my ex-wife. Right, let's talk about that. The next session is this. This is what we're going to talk about. Get all your thoughts together between now and when we next speak about your ex-wife and the situation. And we went ahead and we did that. We spoke for an hour about his ex-wife. And I gave him advice from me, my perspective as a woman. What can he do to help to try and, you know, bring that relationship back together? And I'm not, you know, I don't think he was asking for us to get him back together with his wife and they're going to go off into the sunset. But what he wanted was to be able to speak to his kids. We went ahead and did that. Next point was, get me off the street. Can you imagine? It wasn't the other way around. It was, I want my family first. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, let's go. Get him off the street. Right, we've got these councils available. Let's go ahead and I'm going to write the emails for you. Da, 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 da. Okay, now he's been housed. What's next? Personal assistant. Next thing is, I need to get a job. I have all of these PhDs. Imagine, he's better than me.
All of them.
No joke. He went from accountancy to this, to that. And I was just like, what? You're meant to be like a millionaire. And he was just like, with all of this stuff, I've been distracted and I lost my job. Mm-hmm. I got addicted to substance abuse, blah, blah, blah. You know, the same story that we hear. And I was like, okay, let's build your confidence. So we sat down, we started building his confidence. I let him know how amazing he is and da, 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 da. And it wasn't just crap. It was actual real life. It's true. You are amazing. Da, 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 da. And then he got himself a job. Then it's funny, I'm thinking about him because he texted me recently saying, thank you. He was just like, I'm in a much better place. Like, thank you. And that was only us talking over 2 months. And look now, he's got his job, he's doing his thing.
It's amazing. Honestly, it's like
goosebumps.
Yeah, it's just, and you know, I feel that it's the one thing we so often like overlook, you know, but what you're talking about is like that hour conversation that you had, or like that hour listening, really, like actually really paying attention and like giving him your time. If you think about it, it's like gold.
Mm.
It's like sort of in today's society, that's sort of like this commodity that's just so valuable. I mean, think, did he have the chance to do that in the last year to somebody? The last 5 years, maybe, depending on how long he was living on the street for.
Yeah.
If anyone really like listening, you know, could think about the last time that someone really sat down and were like, hey, I'm going to give you an hour and you're going to spill onto me and you're going to talk to me about what's going on and what you might need in your life right now. Yeah. It's a very rare thing.
Yeah.
You know, depending on your support network, obviously, you know. And even when we do, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like even now, like, I've got like a really solid group of friends. I feel incredibly like lucky and like through watering those plants and those relationships over the years, we're very close. But you still sometimes have that feeling where you're like, when you start to really open up, you're like, you know, like, you know, you want to almost check in and say like, yeah, you're here for this. Cause like, you know, I know I'm sort of, this has turned into like a deeper thing and I'm talking about my heart really in like a deeper way now. So sometimes depending on where you're at, even with our closest friends, you don't want to bother them or you don't really want to kind of like, you know, especially if you're a more agreeable person and more of like naturally an empath, which we know is not about any kind of being a better person. In fact, sometimes that can really bite you if you don't, if you live that way for a longer period of time without taking the time you need for yourself. But anyway, you know, that is sometimes even difficult when you have a support network, when you have people around you. So yeah, you know, hearing you talk about that, Jen, and what that meant for him, it's sort of, it feels, I don't know about you guys, but it sort of feels like almost like this epiphany. Like it's like, oh yeah. Oh, and then you sort of bring yourself back and you go, oh no, that makes a lot of sense. Because humans are sort of like meant to interact and be heard and feel like they've got other people around them. So it's like the tools of, and the kind of answers to a lot of this stuff are already there. You just have to look at communities who are closer to living how humans are evolved naturally to have more of a kind of, you know, just a sense of one another wherever you live. And I think that the conditions that we live in the West are like, they're already there to sort of like really, it's difficult to sort of like, you know, go and knock on your neighbor's door, like even to borrow some whatever you need, like maybe some sugar now or whatever. It's like even that old school thing of going to borrow. I mean, like, I wouldn't do that really. Like, I would sort of think about it and then go, oh no, I should probably just go buy my own bag of sugar. Yeah. And then everyone's got their bag of sugar. I don't really eat much sugar, but whatever. You know, I mean, whatever it is, I'm like, your thing, you'd probably more likely go and buy your thing because you don't want to disturb somebody. Yeah. And then there's 10 houses next to each other that have all got this full bag or whatever, and they're not speaking to each other. My point is, we're, you know, I'm so aware sometimes that the context of this stuff is just, we've got to find ways in kind of, you know, especially bigger cities and the communities we live in, just to sort of break those a little bit. And like, that's why hearing what a hand to guide does and hearing these ways that you're giving that to people, it's just, you know, for me it's really inspiring, you know, because it's so
100%
interlinked to like what the work that I do, but I'm sure for everyone else too as well. It's just a reminder that like, you sometimes are the most important part of the equation, especially 100%. If you haven't got disposable income.
Yes.
And you haven't got you know, all that much to donate, it's like just remembering that, yeah, you can, when you do have a bit of time, sort of be the difference for somebody. And honestly, that can be the difference between
life and death.
Yeah, for some people, you know, if you're really on the edge. And, you know, I know you work a lot of like, really that being your mission and your goal too as well, like preventative work, like for suicide and people who are really in a difficult spot, it can be the difference sometimes. So,
Yeah, that's true. Massively highlighting that currency of our two ears, just our one mouth. And like you say, success is not being able to do life alone. You know, we don't have to go buy the sugar. We don't
share
have to
the
hold
sugar,
the burden.
Please
like,
start sharing your sugar.
Success is not doing things alone. So, Regina, finally, what does the phrase "do something for nothing" mean to you? And how can others take inspiration from what you're doing and apply it to their own lives? You've already given a few tips, but perhaps more specifically, potentially how people can get involved more with Hand to Guide as well.
Yeah.
But what does "do something for nothing" mean to you?
Do something for nothing. When I heard you, that's your motto, I was like, oh my gosh, how obvious is that? Like, that was so inspiring because it's true. We do that every day usually, right? When you pick up the phone to somebody or you decide to open the door, whatever, you're not expecting a payment, are you? You're doing it because you're doing it, right? Mm-hmm. You're trying to make that person's life a little bit easier. I feel like that's what it is. When you're cutting hairs and you're having that conversation with that person, you're doing something for nothing. You're not asking for anything from that person. You just want them to have that opportunity to talk to you and go ahead and open up and, you know, make their life a little bit easier. I feel like we could do that on a daily basis for anything from opening the door, chatting to somebody, reaching out. If you do have that extra pound in your pocket and you know that person's struggling at the tills with, you know, the buggy and all that kind of stuff, just turning around and just saying, do you want this? You know, you're not asking for that person to, you're not actually, most of the time, for me anyway, I get embarrassed at the, thank you, so, oh my God, stop, don't say thank you to me, you know. But doing that is amazing. Some people can go home thinking that, you know, this person needs a prayer. Need to go home and praise to my God or whatever it is that you're, you know, believing in to say thank you to that person. And I feel like that is a way to fill up your cup. You remember you were saying about having an empty cup all the time? I feel like a lot of us, even if you've got £1 million in your account and you just live in this penthouse, and your life can be really, really empty. And that's when you kind of see them spiraling and all that kind of stuff. But when, for me personally, what fills my cup is doing something for nothing. Mm-hmm. That for me is what fills my cup. So that's what I feel like people should try and do a little bit more of.
I love that. I've got my hands in a heart. You can't see this. And where can people find out a little bit more about you and about Hand to Guide?
Yes.
For any of those people who are online, do go and check out Regina's TED Talk. It's excellent. TEDx Talk.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a really good place to like hear more about. It's amazing, your talk online. They should definitely go and check that out, because you go, you know, more into like the story and trajectory of like how it sort of like all started and began for you. But yeah, really amazing that talk.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you for that. Yes, it's under Regina White on YouTube. We've turned off our Hand to Guide website. The reason why is because I'm having a tune-out session. I'm learning to love myself. I'm learning to take a Hand to Guide, as opposed to it trying to be like a Save the Children, these big corporate kind of charities, not saying that they're doing anything wrong, but I want it to be one-on-one. I'm taking each person that approaches me, or if I reach out to somebody, and giving them my undivided attention. So I've turned off the website because I feel like a lot of people did. I just get influxed by people that need to talk to me and everything. And so now it's mainly on Instagram. You can reach me. I don't know if you can also see, I'm no longer posting anything for now. Reason being is I just feel like social media is a bit too toxic for me, and I'm not able to focus. I go on there and you've got 1 million, you know, you can go from a negative story to a positive story to another 15 negative stories. And oh my gosh, like, I don't know how people do it every day. And then I want to go and put out the most basic thing, and I feel like I'm being judged on it. And especially if you've done like lots of work on, you know, that particular thing and you think it's amazing, you see one like, it hurts. And it's like, no, it shouldn't be like that. You know, your story is your story. What you want to put out there is what you want to put out there. It shouldn't be about likes and all of that kind of stuff. But if you ever want to reach me just to have a chat or whatever, just Instagram me. That's the best way, is @ahandtoguide. And yeah, we can talk. It comes straight to my phone and you're speaking to me directly.
Yeah, that's great, because it's just a line of communication. If people, like, you know, I'm sure they will listen to you now and feel like, wow, it might be something that's really close to the heart for certain reasons, personal reasons. It might just be inspiring for them to like want to get involved. And equally, you know, just hearing you and your story and like the depth of it and kind of just how you transition from like a really dark place into kind of how you can help other people and how you can, you know, make that your strength and kind of be the strength for others. It's really, yeah, it's really amazing. And yeah, and just briefly on the social media side of it too, I mean, I think it's really right on that you're like, you're taking that time, because it's not designed to make you feel like you can have a break. No. It's designed to make you feel like you've got to be on this thing all the time. Yes. And if you're not, you're punished by the algorithms. I mean, like, it really is like what you're doing with this break and having that space is like really important.
Yes.
And, you know, liberating yourself for however long you feel you need to from these things. So yeah, right on. And yeah, thanks so much for like chatting to us today. Like, really, honestly, I'm super happy we had the chance to have this conversation, because yeah, within your story, I think it's just so much that will resonate to a lot of people.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me, honestly, and keep doing what you're doing. Honestly, every time I go on social media, which is rare, I always look for you, and I'm like, what is he doing now? Who has he, you know, cut hair for? What's their story? I want to know. Keep doing what you're doing.
Cheers,
honestly,
mate.
It's amazing.
Thank you.
It really, really is. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Conduit Conversations. If you enjoyed it, then please support and subscribe to the podcast. To learn more about my work, then please visit www.dosomethingfornothing.org or Instagram at dosomethingfornothing and at Joshua Coombs. If you're feeling inspired, then please use the hashtag DoSomethingForNothing or hashtag Conduit DSFN.